Welcome to the January 17th virtual service of the Unitarian Universalist Congregation in Blacksburg, Virginia. The service, which observes Martin Luther King Jr. Sunday, is led by our minister, Reverend Pam Phillips, and members of the UUC Anti-Racism Discussion Group. One part of the service cannot be captured in a single video or audio file. Rev. Pam divided the congregants into several breakout rooms. In the podcast, there is several seconds of silence for that time.
Good morning. My name is the Reverend Pam Phillips, and I am honored to be serving the Unitarian Universalist Congregation here in Blacksburg, where we share a mission to inspire, create, and transform. I'm especially delighted today to be weaving worship with members of our anti-racism group on this Martin Luther King Jr. Sunday. As we prepare to worship, let's greet each other by using the chat function to share where you are joining us from. We'll also be moving into breakout rooms near the end of the service to share our own experiences of racism. If that makes you nervous, you are not alone, but I encourage you to stay and just listen, even if you don't feel like sharing. Listening is as important as speaking. If you are here with us for the first time, we are so glad that you have found us. You'll find a link in the chat to the virtual visitors card. Fill it out if you'd like to receive announcements from us and if you'd like to learn more about UUC. We invite you to stay after the service for our virtual coffee hour. We'll have smaller breakout rooms so you have a chance to meet people. If you have a joy or a sorrow this week that you'd like shared aloud this morning during the service, you'll find a link in the chat to fill out the joys and sorrow card as well. There are also many opportunities to meet virtually throughout the week. Look at the calendar on our website for times and Zoom links. Thanks to all the volunteers who make all of these gatherings possible. I do want to share a couple of specific announcements today. There will be a conversation about unity this afternoon at 11, or it's starting at 11:30. Also, there will be an MLK celebration that is being put on by the NAACP of Montgomery County, Radford City, Floyd County, and that's at 3:30. You do have to register to get into that celebration. So that is also in the link. And then tomorrow, there's a special gathering of Unitarian Universalists from all over Virginia. It's a Legislative Ministry Virginia. It will be at 5 o'clock, and that will be a Zoom meeting. And I encourage you to come to learn how you can advocate for abolishing capital punishment. And now I'd like to introduce Karen Hager, who is our Director of Lifespan Faith Development.
Good morning. RE began again last week, and here's what the kids did in and after class.
Our preschool class read the storybook, The Pigeon Needs a Bath, and had fun making pigeon handprint pictures. And our K-5 class watched the Pixar short, The Legend of Mordu, talked about greed and selfishness, and made their own stuffed bears. Don't forget that we'll be holding the Fifth Dimension for Adults later this month with episodes of The Twilight Zone used to discuss values, ethics, and social justice issues. We've opened this class to UUs across Virginia and to the congregation in Cincinnati that I'm currently serving, and so this will also be an opportunity to meet other UUs. So put Tuesday, January 26th from 7 to 8 on your calendar, plan to join us. And finally, you can still sign up for our class, Transgender Inclusion in Congregations, which will begin the first week of February. The sign-up link will be in all email announcements. See you next week.
Now I'd like to invite Helen Radquist, one of the members of our anti-racism group, to read the Kindling the Chalice words.
We light this chalice for the warmth of welcome, the light of hope, and the fire of service.
Thank you. And now, we have special opening words that are part of our opening hymn. The words come from Martin Luther King Jr. and part of a video for our, the hymn is Let Justice Roll Down. Musician Leah Morris has generously shared this video with many UU congregations. As we listen and maybe sing along, I encourage you to look for the connections between the civil rights movement led by Dr. King and what we are called to do today.
Morally, I was led to nonviolence because I felt that it was the best moral way to deal with the problem. We were seeking to establish a just society. And it was my feeling then, and it is my feeling now, that violence is certainly much more socially destructive, and it creates many more social problems than it solves. So I was led to nonviolence for deep moral reasons. And I turned to it because I felt that it was the morally excellent way to deal with the problem of racial injustice in our country.
There is no freedom, the wise men said, let justice roll down. Roll down when the poor cry out for shelter and bread. Let justice roll down like a mighty stream. Oh, children, don't you get weary? Walk together, believe in the dream. When the way gets rough, we'll make a new way. Let justice roll down like a mighty stream. Hatred will never drive out hate. Let love roll down, roll down. Remember our hearts can make us great. Let love roll down like a mighty stream. Oh, children, don't you get weary. Walk together, believe in the dream. When the way gets rough, we'll make a new way. Let your love roll down like a mighty stream. When brutality threatens our daughters and sons, let peace roll down, roll down. May our voices rise up louder than the guns. Let peace roll down like a mighty stream. Oh, children, don't you get weary. Walk together, believe in the dream. When the way gets rough, we'll make a new way. And let peace roll down like a mighty stream. Step by step, one by one, let justice roll down, roll down. They can kill the prophet, but the dream lives on. Let justice roll down like a mighty stream. Oh, children, don't you care. We walk together, believe in the dream. When the way gets rough, we'll make a new way. Let justice roll down like a mighty stream.
To it because I felt that it was the morally excellent way to deal with the problem of racial injustice in our country.
I invite you now to join with Jill Kuechold, also a member of the anti-racism group, as she reads our congregational covenant.
We covenant to create a place of respect and kindness, and to build a spiritual community based on reason and courageous love. We will listen to one another respectfully, assume good intentions, use the power of our words with care, express gratitude, honor our differences, help one another, and welcome all. We will communicate directly, honestly, and compassionately. When we hurt one another, we will forgive, make amends, and reconnect. While we celebrate the words of our mission statement and of this covenant, we affirm that our mission lives through our actions.
Each week, UUC donates half of the offering to a local charity or UU affiliated organization. This week's recipients is Montgomery County, Radford City, Floyd County chapter of the NAACP and their Samuel H. Clark Memorial Scholarship Award. Up to 5 qualified individuals will receive $1,000 scholarships. If you will look at the screen, you'll be able to see in your order of service, you'll be able to see various ways to give. I wanted to add to explaining about this, how important I think this is, especially on this week when we're celebrating Martin Luther King and celebrating the anti-racism group. So often what we hear from ourselves and others is, I don't know what to do. I don't know how to help. I think this is a good way to help. And if you'll join with me, we accept these offerings in support of our congregation and our larger community, recognizing always that in giving and receiving, we participate in a circle of care with no beginning and no end.
As the anti-racism group planned this service, David Burr suggested we sing our next hymn because protesters sang it during the 1960s. He said, "This little light of mine was big at the Highlander Folk School," which he knew because his office at Cornell United Religious Work was next to that of Ewell Reagan, who had been at Highlander. Dave said, "If I remember correctly, protesters liked it precisely because it was positive and seemingly inoffensive." I did a little research and learned that Dave's memory was very accurate, and that activists like Rosa Parks, Pete Seeger, and Martin Luther King Jr. gathered at Highlander to trade ideas. And in a synchronous, or maybe not so synchronous way, our former co-moderator, Elandria Williams, was also working at Highlander. David also reminded me that the ministers facing down the white supremacist in Charlottesville 3.5 years ago started singing "This Little Light of Mine." If you watch the video on YouTube, you can hear the ministers singing with shouts of "Jews will not replace us" in the background. Another connection between the past and the present. So with that in mind, and with gusto, let's sing "This Little Light of Mine" with Jared Natalie and Caroline Gibbs. So this month, we are considering what it means to be a people of imagination. And today we are imagining a world with racial equity. Before we look to the future, though, it's good to look at the past. And I'd like to introduce Anna Keppel Benson, who grew up in this congregation, to share some of what she's learned. Anna?
Hi, everyone. Looking forward to talking with you all today. So in order to make sense of our world today or to imagine a future with racial equity, we have to acknowledge and understand our shared history. With this spirit in mind, I researched some of our UU history in the push for racial equity, both the successes and failures, which I will share with you today. Since our founding in 1961, Unitarian Universalists have been relatively progressive in the collective push for racial justice. But we must also recognize our historical shortcomings so that we can hold ourselves accountable and continue to improve. Here are a few examples to consider. So on one hand, in 1963, the UU General Assembly passed a resolution discouraging racial discrimination at a time when racial segregation was pervasive. On the other hand, the same General Assembly rejected a resolution that would have actually prohibited racial discriminatory policies in congregational bylaws. Another example, on one hand, we often remember the three UU white ministers who were attacked in 1965 in Selma after marching for Black civil rights, and in particular, Reverend James Reeb among them, who was killed by white supremacists. Following Reverend Reeb's death, UU ministers poured into Selma en masse, making up 200 of the 550 white clergy representatives in attendance. On the other hand, as Hayward Henry Jr. points out, only 2 weeks prior in Selma, Black activist Jimmy Jackson was murdered by state troopers, and UU ministers didn't show nearly the same outpouring of support for his death. On one hand, UUs elected William G. Sinkford to be the seventh president of the UUA in 2001, making us one of the first predominantly white denominations to be led by a Black man. On the other hand, during and after his presidency, Black membership in the UU was only around 1%. One of the most important periods of our UU history of racial justice, and one that is likely a factor in that 1% statistic, is the Black empowerment controversy that occurred between 1967 and 1970. I won't go into all the details, but instead we'll try to paint a broader picture of its context and the implications for racial justice within the UU. So in 1967, during the Black Power movements, the UU held an emergency conference in response to the Black Rebellion. The vast majority of Black participants advocated for the Black Affairs Council, or BAC. In response, several mostly white members formed another group called the Black and White Alternative, BAWA, which also advocated for racial representation, but who didn't support Black empowerment. These groups essentially represented a schism in the racial justice movement at the time, broadly defined by Black self-determination on one hand and the more gentle racial integration on the other. The leader of BAC, the Black Empowerment Group, Hayward Henry Jr., put it this way: "We have missed a very simple question, and it is, who will the Black community follow? Those who believe in its own participation and right to self-determination, or those who offer paternalistic approaches? The reality of this moment to us is very clear. It should also be very clear to you. This is the most viable opportunity we will have ever had to be the Unitarian Universalists that we want to be." The next 2 years, the General Assembly voted to support funding for BAC, but the UUA board, who ultimately controls the budget, continually cut the BAC's funding back and place onerous and distinct restrictions on the use and management of its funds, restrictions that didn't exist for other councils within the UU. And meanwhile, also funneled support into the rival organization, BAWA. There was lots of conflict over these 2 years. UU Reverend John E. Gibbons described the rift at the time. There were physical confrontations and verbal assaults hurled at UU assemblies. There were over 200 participants who walked out of the 1969 General Assembly. Black UUers felt dismissed, betrayed, and devastated. And Gibbons suggested that the entire association was on the verge of collapse. Eventually, in 1970, the General Assembly stopped funding the BAC, and the BAC formally separated from the Unitarian Universalist Association. I think that this internal conflict in the UUA reflected what was happening on a broader social and political scale. During this period, civil rights leaders and Black empowerment activists were assassinated, but policies and outcomes remained largely unchanged, lending to immense frustration and pain for those who were working for racial justice. Meanwhile, many white people held only conditional support for racial justice and began to back away from the movement. These effects were extremely devastating to our organization, bruising and dividing people. Reverend Givens' advice for the future is that we would be wise not to be too certain of our righteousness. It is a cautionary tale and one whose effects live with us still and whose memory needs to be kept alive because the same possibilities, the same challenges, and the same potholes face us still. It will be a continual challenge to strive for racial equity, but as a dynamic, liberal, and inclusive religion, I believe that we're uniquely positioned and called to help in this fight. This is our chance to get to work. And along those lines, I'm going to turn it over to Barbara to talk about what we want to do going forward.
Yeah, I'm going to tell you about the eighth principle and its development and the process that we're going through. The need for an eighth principle to complement the seven that you use are familiar with traces back to the work of Paula Cole Jones, Director of Racial and Social Justice for one of the former UU Association districts. After working with congregations on these issues for over 15 years, she realized that a person can believe they are being a good UU and following the seven principles without thinking about or dealing with racism and other oppressions at the systemic level. She realized that an eighth principle was needed to correct this and worked with Bruce Paul Johnson, a member of the UU Church of the Restoration in Philadelphia, to put together a draft in 2013. In 2017, the national UUA was shaken up by a regional hiring decision that was widely interpreted as racist, leading to several resignations, including that of President Peter Morales. His successor co-presidents created the Commission on Institutional Change to recommend how the UUA could improve its culture and move forward. Also in 2017, the delegates at the UUA General Assembly clearly called for an explicit anti-racism principle. The Commission on Institutional Change issued their report called Widening the Circle of Concern in June 2020. One of its recommendations was that by 2022, an explicit commitment to become anti-oppressive be included in the bylaws of the UUA, which include the principles and purposes. They also recommended that congregations do the same, using the example of congregations who had already adopted such statements. In May 2017, the UU Church of the Restoration became the first congregation to adopt the language developed by Pollock, Johnson, and Jones, and recommended that the UUA adopt it as well. Since then, over 25 congregations have adopted that language, including ones in Richmond and Virginia Beach. In the summer of 2020, the UUA charged a commission with a duty to study revisions to the bylaws, including the seven principles and six sources. The charge stated that the bylaws should challenge UUs to place the liberation of all in all its dimensions at the center of our lives. They should be honest about our past, name what we are facing and our aspirations and where we hope to be, not just for today, but looking out at the horizons. They should ask us to choose love in action as the path forward. Our commitment to anti-racism, anti-oppression, and multiculturalism is love in action and should be centered in any revision. The recommendations that the commission comes up with will be voted on in the 2022 GA. The language already adopted by congregations calls UUs to affirm and promote journeying towards spiritual wholeness by working to build a diverse, multicultural, beloved community by our actions that accountably dismantle racism and other oppressions in ourselves and our institutions. Pam asked me to say why I think we should adopt the eighth principle. Someone I admire very much in this congregation once said something like, if our church isn't working for good, then it's just a country club. We say that love is our doctrine. Dr. Cornel West said, justice is what love looks like in public. We need to go public with our love. Thank you.
Amen. We need to go public with our love. Ah. So, whatever we do here in the New River Valley, it is good to know that we are not alone, but part of a larger denomination that is struggling to learn, to grow, to change. And now I'd like to introduce Annie Zaldivar, who is growing up in this congregation and will share a reading with us. Annie?
Hi. Another world is possible. We say it again and again, even when the proof lies somewhere beyond the horizon, beyond our reach, beyond our imagination. This is our faith. Another world is possible. Not somewhere else. Another world, another lifetime, but here and now, for us and for all. Another world is possible. There is no single path toward that world, no one strategy or approach that will restore balance, heal brokenness, sow wholeness, free creation. There are many routes toward liberation, toward freedom, but the abundance of options does not absolve us from the responsibility of acting. Another world is possible. The call, the duty of each moment in history is to discern who we are and what we can bring with humility, integrity, faith. What is the context and how can we address it? With accountability, with agility, resilience, and skill. What is the vision and how can we realize it? With accountability, relationship, and joy. Another world is possible. In this time of despair, of fear, of collapse. This time that is both like every other era and like no other time in history. It is audacious to declare our faith and to commit our work to a world that is more free, more just, more whole. But we are an audacious people in good company with many kin, and we are ready to show up and work hard and stay humble and make friends and hold the vision, starting here, now, today, with us and persevering however long it takes until that other world is not only possible, but another world is here.
Thank you, Annie. Starting here, now, today. Annie has laid down the challenge to us all with Ashley Horan's powerful words. We can show up and work hard and stay humble and make friends and hold the vision, persevering until that other world is not only but possible, but that world is here. That world with racial equity. Today, as we honor the memory of the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. and all the hundreds of civil rights workers who made such strides in the 1960s, we also acknowledge that the dream he dreamed has yet to come to fruition. The events of last summer reminded us of that, as did the events of January 6th. Yes, we've come so far, only to be reminded how far we must still go. As we were planning this service, someone suggested finding a reading from Martin Luther King's I Have a Dream speech. That's not a hard thing to do. He was a fine preacher, and that was an amazing sermon. But then David Burr suggested looking to King's last speech, the one he gave in Memphis the night before he died. So I pulled it up on the internet. I read it again, and I wept. It was so prescient. How did he know? He spoke about the pilot on his plane to Memphis, telling the passengers about all the precautions they had taken because King was on board. His life was always under threat. But then he said it didn't matter to him. "I just want to do God's will," he said, "and he's allowed me to go up to the mountain, and I've looked over, and I've seen that promised land. I may not get there with you, but I want you to know tonight that we as a people will get to the promised land." As David wrote to me about that speech, we're all there. If there's ever been a year that reminded us how far off the end of racism it was this one. But I'd like to take us back to some other words from that speech, the ones at the top of our order of service, spoken in 1967 to those ready to stand with the striking sanitation workers in Memphis, Tennessee. King said, "Let us rise up tonight with a greater readiness. Let us stand with a greater determination. Let us move on in these powerful days, these days of challenge to make America what it ought to be. We have an opportunity to make America a better nation. We have an opportunity to make America a better nation." His words resonated, and I heard them in my head as I read the words of Reverend Dr. Natalie Fenimore, one of the members of the Commission on Institutional Change that Barbara told us about. She wrote, "Shirley Chisholm was asked why she, a Black woman, was running for president. 'You don't have a chance. Why are you doing that?' And she said, 'Because I am in love with the America that does not yet exist.'" And that's how Unitarian Universalism is also. Fenimore went on, "I'm in love with the Unitarian Universalism that does not yet exist. But I have to hold both the love for that thing and the love for the reality. It does not yet exist. It will probably not exist in my lifetime," she wrote. "I don't think it will in that of my children, but I can't deny my love for it. You know, wanting to be there in that struggle. That's why I'm fighting." We have the opportunity and the obligation to fight for the Unitarian Universalism that does not yet exist, to fight for the United States of America that does not yet exist. We have the opportunity and the obligation to fight for a world with racial equity. Today, we've carved out some time for us to do some of the groundwork for racial justice work, and that is for us to share our stories, to listen to one another, to create compassionate community so that we can transform the world with courageous love. Talking about racism is difficult. It's easy to see white supremacy in the signs and flags and shouts of people like those who gathered for the Unite the Right rally in Charlottesville and those who stormed the Capitol in Washington, D.C. It's much harder to acknowledge the racism closer to home, from our childhoods, in our families, in our institutions, or in ourselves. I look back at some of the things I used to say, and I cringe looking at them through a lens of anti-racism that I've gained the past few years through learning and listening. So much of my own learning has come through listening. In just a few moments, we'll go into breakout rooms to have a chance to speak our truths and to be heard, to listen to one another. The anti-racism group has learned so much from sharing their own experiences and learnings. Today we'll give everyone just that opportunity. There will be a facilitator in each group who will help guide the conversation. Here's the prompt. Share one thing you'd like this small group to know about your experience with racism. It could be a story from your youth when you witnessed or experienced some kind of racist action, or it could be an understanding you've gained over a lifetime. If this makes you a little uncomfortable, that's okay. It probably makes us all uncomfortable. But let's stretch ourselves a little. Sharing and listening helps to create the bonds that we'll need to affirm the eighth principle and to commit to building a diverse, multicultural, beloved community, to dismantling racism and other oppressions in ourselves and in our institutions. Give yourself a pat on the back. You went into a breakout room and talked about hard things. Ah. This morning, we've heard about our past and learned about opportunities to not just imagine, but to create the world we dream about, a just world. If you are inspired to take on the challenge, you may wonder what you can do. Well, Anna Keppel Benson has created an amazing document. I think it might even be 3 pages long. She's created a document that will help you make some steps by learning, using your money, advocating, connecting with others, choosing a racial justice issue, and finding out what is happening and how you can get connected. And I'm going to ask Isabel if she can go ahead and put the link to that document in the chat. There is so much that we can do individually and so much more that we can do together. Before we close today's service, though, I want to acknowledge that we are at a tender time in our lives, in the life of our nation. Mm-hmm. And so I invite you to write in the chat what you would like to light a candle of hope or remembrance for. Let's light candles. Let's light candles of hope this morning before we hear our last song. So if you'd like a candle lit, and light one more candle. May the light in these candles inspire us with hope and with commitment. Now it is time for us to close the service by extinguishing the chalice. But not the warmth of community, not the light of truth, not the fire of commitment. These we will carry in our hearts until we are together again. Amen. And blessed be.